You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own unless otherwise stated and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Last show, I was tired, but I'm not tired anymore. It was probably my worst show in the sense that I was very, 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 very tired, almost nod off while I was talking. So what I'm going to do is, to some extent, repeat the lead story of yesterday that when I went on the air was really breaking, that the Federal Reserve announced that they will not be tapering off at the moment. They will continue to be purchasing $85 billion of bonds every month. So I'm going to review again the Federal Reserve announcement and what it means, and go over that with a little bit more detail, because there are more developments. However, I have some good news. I've been waiting and waiting and waiting for information from the Benghazi hearings, and there is some. Matter of fact, I think these are, and I need to digest it. So I'm sort of making an announcement that tomorrow's show, at long last, I will be covering the Benghazi Oversight Committee hearings of the Benghazi scandal, because there's a lot more information. Before, there is virtually none. So I think what has happened, there's always a lag between the time the Oversight Committee actually has the hearings, and it's usually 12 hours or 24 hours. The committee definitely met yesterday and is meeting today. And I heard some of the testimony, and I was, flabbergasted. Just for example, they were interviewing or questioning Admiral Mullins, who was one of the two people in charge of the Accountability Review Board. And the congressman was asking the questions. And one of the key ones was, first of all, when did a request go out to NATO to provide some assets or support for the people that were under attack at Benghazi? The admiral answered, the request never went out. Here are people being attacked. This was over an eight-hour period, and absolutely no attempt was made to get NATO assets involved. And why is that important? Well, the congressman asked the second question. Why wasn't the Italian government and Italian Air Force called? Because they had Tornado jet fighters that were literally 35 minutes away from Benghazi. And the answer, they were never called. What's apparently coming out is the Accountability Review Board, their purpose was not to get all the information. It was really to protect the higher-ups in the State Department, specifically Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, as well as the people surrounding her. And as one of the mothers of one of the people killed said, why isn't Secretary of State or former Secretary of State here being questioned by your committee? And that's an excellent question. And she should be. She should be brought back to the committee and questioned under oath. It happened on her watch. Now, I'll do a little bit of defense of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. My candid opinion of this is this was a covert Central Intelligence Agency operation. The ambassador that was killed, Chris Stevens, was in charge of that mission. He was the face, if you will, that gave it a very, very thin veneer that this was a diplomatic mission when it wasn't. From start to finish, this was a covert operation to gather arms from the various Libyan rebels that they captured in the civil war with Gaddafi, as well as train Libyan rebels, with the purpose of shipping those arms and shipping those fighters or rebels to Syria. Now, when you do an investigation like that, you want to get a lot of information. You want to know any question you ask, especially in the open hearing, you want to know the answer to. And now it's apparent, at least for some of the congressmen asking the questions, they know the answers. One of the congressmen that was questioning Admiral Mullins, he knew the answer beforehand, and he wanted Admiral Mullins to confirm it. And that's really what needed to happen. And I'm glad they're finally zeroing in on it, at least one aspect of this operation. Namely, there were military assets close by that could have been called and weren't called for whatever reason. And that means you need to go higher up in the chain. Because one of the series of questions needs to be asked, where was the president from after his 5 o'clock meeting with the Secretary of Defense in the White House? And I think it's really the embarrassing answer to that question. He was asleep because he was preparing to leave early that morning for a campaign fundraising stop in Nevada, in Las Vegas. And that was planned on his schedule. So instead of staying up all night or really canceling the trip and being in the Situation Room and making sure that our men and women that are employed by the United States, the CIA and the State Department, made sure their back was covered, the president wasn't there. Now, he delegated to someone. My suspicion it is to Valerie Jarrett, but who knows? Because the bottom line is 4 people died. And I will be the first to say the ambassador and the State Department computer technology person. It's doubtful that assistance could have been gotten to him in time. And what the question raised there is security was in terribly lax. It's that area of this scandal that's probably been the best explored. But what hasn't been explored, that needs to be explored, is the CIA operation in detail. And that's what they want to keep the Oversight Committee from. They really want to keep the Oversight Committee from. And there's a whole slew of questions that need to be asked about that. For example, what weapons were you gathering? And where were they coming? Were you purchasing them? Which I think they were. Who were you purchasing from? How many? Over what period of time? And where did those weapons go? Remember, Gaddafi purchased most of his weapons either from Russia or China or Czechoslovakia. He purchased from many nations, but his primary source was Russia. So he had a lot of Russian rifles, pistols, and shoulder surface-to-air missiles that can be fired over a person's shoulder, similar to our Stinger missiles. And why the CIA, during the Civil War, was able to round up, if you will, a lot of those arms, probably as much as a half of the Gaddafi arms that he had stashed, if you will, or stored in various military bases all over the country, the Libyan rebels actually got a hold of. What I plan to do tomorrow, and I'm sort of alerting you, is I'm going to focus probably entirely on Benghazi. I really get to focus more. One of my challenges, and one of the reasons why I move from a weekly show with just typically with 2 to 3 hours on Friday to a daily show, is I need to become comfortable with, and my target is, a show of about 126 minutes, a little over 2 hours every day, 5 days a week. So that means every day I have to prepare a radio show. And that's somewhat of a challenging because I've done, and I'm really evaluating my involvement in this. I've been fairly regularly, like every week, submitting stories to the Richland Chronicle because for a number of reasons, but one of the primary reasons is to increase my writing skills, but what I'm writing about usually, not always, but usually also helps with the show prep. But because of the challenging, I need a, in any newspaper, you have editors that are going to go over this. And because this is a college paper, they come in at different times. So it's not like I finish the story, hand it to the three or four editors that are going to look at it, and I get feedback. What I'm doing over a 3 or 4 hour period, as people come in and leave, I get what I write edited. I have to make corrections and then hand it over for the people that actually lay it out. And that is just becoming a, as far as I'm concerned, it's not streamlined. It's too time consuming. And I either have to make a decision either not to write for the paper. I'm going to continue writing. It's just the process of editing it and the reiterations. They interfere with my show prep. And I should, you know, in commercial radio, I wouldn't be telling you this. I'm only telling you so you understand that I plan to make this, I plan to focus on the radio show and be prepared for the radio show. That is my focus. That's my attention. I'm somewhat distracted because I'm writing these stories. So that'll take care of itself, because what I plan to do in the future is I'll write stories for the paper, but I'll write them on the weekends, have them completed as far as I'm concerned, and then the editors can look at it at their leisure, and I can correct it at my leisure, not so it's at the very last minute, because the paper is usually put to bed Thursday and Friday. Friday is the sort of the deadline, and the deadline is typically 5 o'clock. So I wanted to clear the decks today, and I have it cleared. The article I prepared for the paper is the, I haven't posted the show, but I will once this show's over, was 2 days ago. It was a Tuesday interview with a professor at the University of Texas that gave a very good but rather comprehensive review of the Constitution, the War Powers Act, and I was very interested in it because I think we're going to be revisiting the Syrian situation. Now, I could be wrong there, because I'm not really sure whether or not Syria and Russia are serious about destroying those chemical weapons. I think Russia is, but I'm not sure to what extent this Syrian regime of Assad is. And the reason why that's important is if the United States government, both the Secretary of State, our military, as well as the Central Intelligence Agency and the National Security Agency, determine that the Syrian government is not living up to the agreement that they eventually will turn over these chemical weapons, then I think we're going to revisit the fact that Congress needs to authorize the use of military force. Now, let me be very clear. I'm against any military intervention in Syria. I'm against the United States government and our military and the Central Intelligence Agency becoming policemen of the world. The United States is broke, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be over $17 trillion of national debt in a couple of days, if it hasn't happened already. We no longer can support a worldwide empire of military bases, over 100 worldwide. And it's time to not only bring the troops home, but to close down many, not all, but many of those bases, and withdraw, not completely, but significantly from the Middle East. Now, why do I say that? The only reason why the federal government, the United States, is in the Middle East is oil and natural gas, but primarily oil. And for 50 years, that was a major source of our imports of crude oil. Well, guess what, folks? Luckily for the United States, the technology has advanced to such an extent that today, not only can we drill deeper wells, both on land and in the ocean, but we can do what's called horizontal drilling, that enable us to use one well, go down to the depth to where the reservoirs are, and then branch out. Think of it as the center of a circle. You go down into the center of the circle, and then you branch out and drill and have multiple sources for the oil that eventually is pumped up and then distributed or sent to refineries, either by tanker or pipeline or train, depending on where the wells are. So in the last 50, 60 years, we've had incredible advances that we're the world's leading developer of this technology, and we can do this. And as a result, we have found gigantic, huge reservoirs of natural gas as well as oil throughout our country. We know one of the advantages of the United States, we know based on the records of previous past explorations where the oil and natural gas is. Now with the advances in technology, we can, if you think about it, re-tap into those reserves, not all of them, as well as new sources, entirely new, that we didn't know about. And that's just one area, is the horizontal drilling. The fracking is very good to get the oil up, to break down the foundations, that the rock foundations that are trapping the oil and natural gas. That's what fracking does. You're sending down water with some treatment of it under pressure to break up those rock foundations so that the oil and or natural gas can flow. It's that simple. So the United States, as well as the American people, are very fortunate. And what is this going to mean? The United States, again, as it was many years ago, is going to be a major supplier of natural gas for sure to the rest of the world. That means Europe, Japan, China. Now, it's not going to happen overnight, but we know we have those gas reserves. We know we have those oil reserves, and right now we're tapping them and using them primarily in the United States. But as the infrastructure, primarily the pipelines, get developed to send the oil or natural gas to refineries, primarily in Texas, what's going to happen? We're going to be exporting a lot more gasoline, a lot more petroleum products, a lot more natural gas. It's going to be a boom and a resurgence in U.S. manufacturing. Why? Electricity, for many, many years, the major fuel used to fire the fuel source for the electricity was coal. Coal today is still approximately 40% of all the electricity is produced using coal. And we've developed the technology to make it very, very clean. Now, what's going to happen is much of the coal in the United States is going to be exported, because about 80% of all the new electrical plants being built around the world are fired by coal. So countries such as China, India, Japan, and other countries, I've just named some of the big ones, will be importing coal and using coal to power their electrical generators. That's the fuel that will turn the turbines, that will generate the electricity. In addition to that, the United States more and more will use natural gas as the preferred source of fuel to generate that electricity. And the price that manufacturers as well as you and I pay for electricity should go down as the supply of the natural gas expands. And a lot of what's going to happen is a lot of these electrical generating plants will commit to long-range contracts with the companies developing these fields to lower the price, get a real cheap price for the natural gas. They'll make long-range commitments over decades. And as a result, the price of electricity in the United States should go down. And that's the major benefit of a free market system. Everyone is looking for goods and services at a cheaper price. And to the extent that you have companies, because of their efforts, can deliver that, everyone wins. The people that actually go find the natural gas as well as the oil win. The refineries win. The American people win in cheap manufactured goods. Why? Because of the electrical prices will go down. Now, this is going to take time. It's not going to happen overnight, but we're not talking a long time, 5 to 10 years max. And we still have a reserve of coal, and we have the capability of using coal if the EPA would get out of the way. The EPA is on the rampage to really try to shut down electrical plants that are fueled by coal. The problem they're having, yes, and that means a lot of coal miners and coal mines can't operate because they're subject to inspection, and they're looking for minor infractions to shut down the mines. We have a mindset in the federal government is they really would like to, and they're succeeding, to shut down coal production. And the next step, if they can't do that, or the coal is being exported, try to shut down electrical plants that use coal. Even though we have the scrubbers in place to make it, I won't say 100% pollution-free, but hardly any. Now, that's not the case with countries, poorer countries such as China and India, where they literally can't afford the technology. So our coal will be exported primarily to China, India, and other countries that need coal to fire their plants. So we're going to see rejuvenation in the production of coal in the United States, a reversal of what's happening right now. And that's good. That's a win-win. But what you got to keep in mind, if we don't use the coal, then someone else is going to use the coal. And we will supply the coal, or our competitors will supply the coal. The United States is an energy resource country. And that's happening. So we will be retreating from the Middle East. Retreating is the wrong word. The Middle East will be a source for energy, namely oil, and to a lesser extent, natural gas, for countries that are located near the Middle East. Well, who's located near the Middle East? China, as well as India and Europe. And so the Middle East will be a player for many, many more decades. Now, what country really is way dependent upon the export of their energy, primarily natural gas, and to a lesser extent oil? It's Russia, folks. Europe, especially the Eastern Europe, but all of Europe, there are pipelines from Russia providing natural gas, and natural gas is used in turn to produce electricity. So as more natural gas as well as oil is discovered, both in the United States and for example, off the coast of Israel, Lebanon, Syria, and probably Egypt eventually, and more pipelines are developed from Iran through Iraq to Syria, Russia is going to have competition. It's in Russia. Russia's advantage to keep the price of oil and the price of natural gas up. Why? In terms of their export revenue, that accounts for about 60% or more of their total exports. So the higher the value or the price of a barrel of oil, for example, the more valuable is that oil that Russia is selling, as well as the natural gas. So increased competition from the United States, plus increased competition from Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and the countries in the Middle East, will result in falling natural gas as well as crude oil prices. If you look out another 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And who does this impact the most? It clearly impacts the most Russia. Because Russia has the problem of a declining population. It also has a massive alcohol problem. But its government is relying upon the revenues that the exports from energy, primarily oil and natural gas, provide. So their interest is to have disruption of the supply or transport of oil and natural gas from the Middle East to countries that rely on them. They benefit from higher and higher natural gas as well as crude oil prices. It's that simple. And that's what you got to keep in mind. But the point, I got on this discussion because our primary focus for the last 50 to 60 years has been in the Middle East. And that's where the United States has been involved most militarily. And I'm not saying we're going to have 100 overnight, we're going to totally withdraw. But over the next decade, that is truly going to happen. And the reason is very simple. The United States will go, instead of being a net importer of energy, namely crude oil, it will become an exporter of energy, both oil, gasoline, and natural gas. And at some future date, probably about 10 years from now, maybe 15, it could be sooner though, the United States will return to being a net exporter of oil and natural gas. And that's all good for not only the citizens of the United States, it's also good for the government, and it's also good for the people of the world. Because cheap energy is a important aspect of developing your country. All of these countries, to develop, need to provide cheap energy for their people to manufacture goods and services. It's that simple. And many of these countries are simply do not have within their borders, within their country, either coal, natural gas, or oil. They rely very much on importing those natural resources from many countries. It's not just the United States. So the United States at one time was the leading exporter of oil. Now, many people forget this. Initially, when oil was discovered and exploited in the United States, it wasn't used to run automobiles, which it is one of the primary uses today. It was used to provide illuminants, namely fuel, for example, kerosene. They would take the oil and turn it into kerosene, and the kerosene would be the fuel to provide lamps, kerosene lamps, for lighting. That was the initial use of that crude oil. That changed with the introduction and development of the combustible engine, where suddenly we had cars and trucks that needed to be powered by gasoline. So we had an alternative use for it. And eventually, both natural gas and oil could be used to power electrical generation plants. Now, at that point in time, coal was the primary fuel used to produce electricity. So the mix has changed over time. we're seeing a shift now where natural gas will be the preferred source of generating electricity. And we'll also see development of reservoirs of oil as well as natural gas, but oil to provide gasoline as well as petrochemicals. So I see a very promising and very positive future for the United States. The problem is we need to get the government under control. It has a what I call SAD, spending addiction disorder, and I'll be returning to more economic stories next week, because what I'd like to be talking is I won't say strictly, but I like a mix of stories. And what's happening right now, we're having the annual debate in Congress between Republicans and Democrats over first raising the debt limit as well as what should happen in terms of the budget. I'm all in full favor of defunding Obamacare. And I make it very simple, and I hope Republicans are listening. I know you've had at least 40 attempts of repealing Obamacare and votes to do it. And the problem is the Senate. I understand that. And that's fine. But if you truly, truly voted that way, then you should back the effort in the Senate by Ted Cruz and others, Mike Lee being the other key one, and to a lesser extent Rand Paul, to defund Obamacare. In other words, every member of the House, Republican or Democrat, that are against Obamacare, and is the majority of the House is against Obamacare, should vote to defund Obamacare. It's that simple. No ifs, ands, or buts, or excuses. I'm talking every Republican in the House, in the Senate. This is the minimum. Every Republican in the House and the Senate should be voting to defund Obamacare. I will leave it up to you to decide how to do that. But you should vote to keep the government open, except for Obamacare. In other words, fund the rest of the federal government. Now you're going to get in another debate as to at what level. The problem I have with the Republican Party, while they talk a good game about balancing the budget and living under or budgeting against a cap, they have consistently not been able to balance the budget. And they're continuing on this down that road. Ladies and gentlemen in Congress, representatives and senators, balance the budget. That's what the American people are telling you. Balance the budget. And that means drastic cuts in spending. And what it really means is shutting down departments. And don't tell me you don't control the Senate. You'll never control the Senate until your words are consistent with what you vote for. Don't tell me you're for a balanced budget, living within a spending caps, and then year after year, every fiscal year budget is on its face unbalanced by hundreds of billions of dollars. Cut the nonsense, cut the rubbish, cut the BS. Balance the budget. Budget to expected revenues, like you have to do, like I have to do, like every individual and family in the United States has to do. Get rid of this congressional budget baseline games that you play, and so does the Democratic Party. Don't give me that in 10 years the budget will be balanced. In 10 years, the debt time bomb will go off. The debt time bomb will blow up. It will explode, and you will be forced to do what I'm recommending now. namely balance the budget, make the tough decisions, lead, follow, or get out of the way. The problem is in Congress, ladies and gentlemen, we have a bunch of followers. They're not leaders, they're followers. That might be news for you. They don't want to get ahead of where the American people is. The American people know what the problem is. It is out of control government spending. It's easy to understand. No individual or family or business or church or city or charity could budget the way our Congress budgets. Get rid of this budget baseline garbage. That is one of the reasons year after year after year after year we've had unbalanced budgets and higher and higher and higher deficits. The way you should be doing it is have a good estimate of what the revenues are. And what's a good estimate? How much money in taxes did you collect last year? And whatever that number is, budget to that number. It's not very hard. You can go online right now and find that number. That should be the number you're budgeting to. But that's not what you do. What you do is you take last year's budget and add a couple of percent for growth in the population, a couple of percent for inflation, and a couple of percent, we got to give them more money, and you add it to it. And what does that lead to? It leads to year after year after year of trillion-dollar deficits. Who do you think you're fooling? I can figure this out by going online. I'm no genius. I'm near genius, but I'm no genius. But I do my homework, and other Americans have done their homework. And that's what the American people are asking. That's what the Tea Party movement is asking. Live within the means of the American people. It's that simple. The big spending days are over. And if you continue down this path, you're going to destroy this country. The government is the problem. It is not the solution. What's causing this stagnation in the economy today is out-of-control government spending. You don't need to be a genius or a rocket science to understand it. No person could do what you're doing. And I know you understand that. You must understand it. And if you don't understand it, you don't belong in Congress. Do your homework. Show some courage, show some integrity, show some concern for the American people. There's a reason why Congress has such a low opinion amongst the American people. Leadership is what the American people are looking for you. We're a representative republic. We rely on you to do the right thing for your own constituents as well as for the United States. And you're not doing the right thing for anybody by year after year after year running deficits of $1 trillion. $1 trillion is $1,000 billion. And since Obama has been president, we've had first a deficit of $1.4 trillion, then $1.3 trillion, then $1.2 trillion, then $1 trillion. Now, I will congratulate you. The trend seems to be going down. And maybe this year it'll be $700 or $750 billion. I don't know. We'll soon see. But I'm not impressed. The true number, the correct number, if you really cared about the American people, it shouldn't be a $1 trillion deficit. The budget should be balanced. There should be a zero deficit. That's how much you're out of control. You do have it in a spending addiction disorder. You got a bad habit. And okay, you're trying to wean yourself slowly off this spending addiction disorder, like a heroin addict or an alcoholic or a gambling addict or a food addict or a smoker. You need to go cold turkey, cold turkey. And if you did that for 2 to 3 years, the American economy would come roaring back. We would go to full employment. But it's not going to be easy for those 2 to 3 years. I'll be the first one to say it, but that is what is required. And there are few, if any, in Congress that is sending out this message. This is tough love. This is tough decision making. This is heavy lifting. And I'm afraid we have a corrupt and cowardly Congress. A corrupt and cowardly Congress that are simply not up to the job. They're not up to the job. And that is a sad commentary of where the United States has arrived at. Shame on you. There's so much room for improvement, it's staggering to think about. Yet year after year after year, you go along to get along, and who are you hurting? Your own children, your own grandchildren, your relatives and friends. So I will apologize for getting on this rant, but it's overdue. We definitely need some leadership out of Washington. And so I hope in the next couple of weeks they'll do some reflection on their job performance, because I'm not impressed. I'm looking for the few leaders in the House and the Senate that understand the problem and will address it. And I know what I'm advocating has, we don't have the votes, but every 2 years we elect you. We elect every House of Representatives and a third of the Senate. And I'm looking for representatives and senators that reflect what I've just said. What I'm calling for is very simple, and it used to be a pillar of the conservative movement. It's still a pillar of the conservative movement. It's called fiscal responsibility, balancing your budget. Everyone in America must do it. All we're asking for Congress is to do it. And we're fed up with excuses. We're fed up of kicking down the can. We're fed up of more and more debt. All the Federal Reserve did yesterday by saying they're not tapering is they are printing money. They are creating money. They're enabling. They're financing the federal debt. The jig is up. The American people are slowly waking up, and they're going to be coming after you, and we're going to kick you out of office because that's the only thing that gets your attention. You're listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Tomorrow will be my weekly wrap-up, where we'll focus primarily on Benghazi as well as economic issues in the news. However, tomorrow is a longer show. It'll be at least 2 and probably 3 hour show. I don't have to cut it short. I have a scheduling problem right now and have to wrap it up. I thank you for listening, and now back to the music.